I believe the title is Attaining Mahasukha, is that correct? There's always a problem with a word like attaining, because as we know, it's very paradoxical. And Mahasukha is really, almost by definition, unattainable. And yet, it's who we are, and it's that paradox of being extimate rather than intimate to our own true nature that is what is so extraordinary about the ego's structure, that it has the capacity to not know itself and yet to know everything else. And so the inversion of that, to unknow everything else so that you can know by being who and what you really are, is perhaps a simplistic way of approaching the concept of attainment. Now, Mahasukha became a popular concept or term in Tantric Buddhism, particularly in the Vajrayana tradition, and which is really the third turning of the Buddhist wheel of Dharma. And then there were split-offs into various other groups that all, I think, would be considered tantric in nature. But some were Hindu, some were Vaishnav, some were Shaivites, some were what are known as Sahajiyas. I think the group would include the Bauls, whom we have studied or sung with. So it's a very blissful group of wisdom schools, very joyous, that introduce this notion. If we want to consider the process of spiritual ascension, we could consider it a three-stage rocket. And the first stage, which was also chronologically the first turning of the wheel, was the stage in which the Buddha proclaimed that samsara is a realm of suffering, and our goal should be to leave samsara and enter nirvana. But this teaching was taught in a very dualistic manner, as if samsara and nirvana were separate, and where is nirvana? How do I get there? And the whole question of what nirvana really is. And in the early days of Buddhism, it kind of became a doxa or a fixed dogmatic belief to take literally the idea of nirvana, which is really synonymous with nirodha. It's cessation. They often use metaphors of the blowing out of the light or the quenching of the desire for consciousness and for existence, and the cessation of all mental activity. And while it is true that the capacity for cessation is an essential portal to the real goal of the spiritual journey, it's not the end point. It's part of the way, because as the Mahayana Buddhists, in response to this goal of reaching nirvana, reacted or responded with a kind of a dialectical antithesis, they said, no, cessation is boring. I'm not leaving an interesting life here, even if they're suffering, for just nothingness. Now, you can have your nothingness. So it began to lose its popularity, and people said, why should I do all of this ascetic work just to end up as nothing, right? I'm already nothing. Why should I do all this work, right? So the second stage rocket took off in the Mahayana schools, and here the idea was that the cessation was the cessation only of the mental chatter of the ego mind, which was trapped in bondage to a fixed identity, an identity based on a bodily organismic vehicle that was mortal and based on its mental apparatus installed in its own, the infancy of that vehicle. So that programming has to cease, and that we also call split mind, because your consciousness in the ego has been split off from the soul or the real self, or both, if you wish. And how it was split off is important to know. So the Mahayana Buddhists, as well as the Shaivite tantric schools, especially the Kashmir schools, who were in parallel. They used different terms, but they were basically sharing the same metaphysic, if you will. And that idea of going through the emptying out of the consciousness of the ego, the eliminating of its sanskaras, because that's all the ego is really made of, are sanskaras. And all sanskaras are codes of tendencies that have been written into the qualium wave functions that continue through time, regardless of the life or death of a body. It's the sanskaras that make up the sutratma, the thread of a soul's existence or being through time, from one lifetime to another. And so the understanding was, if we can eliminate those sanskaras which produce the veil of the ego, then once that veil is no longer blocking the light, we are completely absorbed back into that original nature, which is light and presence and intelligence and creativity and joy and power, etc. So all of those elements or aspects of the real are present, but to reach them, they have to be... there has to be a cessation of mental activity on an ego level, but not mental activity tout court or completely or in itself, but mental activity only of the ego. And this is an important point, because it's not actually ego death that one must go through. It's disidentification from the ego, and the leaving behind of egocentricity and of the belief that the ego is what you are, the ego and its bodily vehicle, and the opening up of the consciousness to that presence that is undefinable, that has no identity. And everyone knows, even though they try to run away from that knowledge, they know that they are not the mind. The mind arises by itself. It thinks by itself. Even if you want it to stop in meditation, you often can't stop it, right? And you can't even change what it's thinking about. Literally, the ego has a mind of its own, but it's not your mind. And it's only once you realize that it's not your mind that you actually have the power to reprogram it. But when you can't reprogram it, as long as you believe you are it, because the ego is the artifact that is produced by the mental chatter, which in turn is produced by the sanskaras. So there's no power within the ego to get rid of the ego or to go through ego death. But by disidentification, one becomes aware that one was never the ego. It's simply an implanted mental object that is running a physical object, but you are not an object. even though you do not or may not know what you are, you know what you are not. So, and this is the basis of all the approaches of yoga, really, as summarized by the mantra neti neti. I know I'm not this, I'm not this, I'm not that. I'm nothing that could be objectified. Once there is a cessation of the ego's tenacious holding on to a sense of having an identity, and that's its main obstacle. It doesn't want to let go of that and not know who one is. It doesn't want to enter into that unknowing long enough to realize that that emptiness is the great bliss. Okay, that's Mahasukha. It's there. It's there now. It was just that you didn't want it because you were afraid of infinite bliss that would be so overwhelming that you would never come back into the little suffering ego, which you probably won't. But it's interesting that it's called Mahasukha, not Parasukha, Mahasukha, which it's often translated, I found in English translations of those tantras in which it is explained, that it's translated as supreme bliss, but it's not. Maha is one step below the supreme. And it's important to recognize that the great bliss is not the final stage, because there's still the question of whose bliss is it? You haven't reached the ultimate perceiver, because even bliss itself, because it's a feeling that arises, so long as it arises to someone, there is still an essential sanskara of an I feeling or representation that that claims it. But the real state of Parasukha, no one claims it. It belongs to no one. And our true identity really is no one. But even to use those words is to produce the illusion of, oh, I get it, but then there is no I that gets it. And it's the letting go of that desire to be the one who gets it, since such a one doesn't exist. There is that, but that is not actually an it. It can never be perceived other than as the real that is without any duality of perceiver and perceived. And it's the letting go of that split mind that is what brings liberation. So the Mahasukha leads to that final state. But you can't get to the final state without going through Mahasukha. So there are these two portals to traverse on the path. And in this retreat, we will be exploring both of them. How do we get to the state of the cessation of the ego mind's chatter, and not just its actual talk, but the paradigm that underlies that self-talk, the attitude, the orientation, the sense of what reality is, all of one's beliefs as an ego. One has to go beyond all beliefs. And many beings don't get that, and they think that Sat Yoga is just another belief, but it's not. It's the process of releasing yourself from all beliefs, because all beliefs are from the other. It's not a matter of some beliefs are internal. All beliefs are coming from mimetic experience. Even language that holds the beliefs you've gotten from outside. Nothing belongs to the ego intrinsically. And this is the meaning of the codependent origination that the Buddhists also speak about. And so the ego has no swabhava, it has no essence, no essential nature, just sanskaras, which are just collapsed qualium wave functions that once they're decollapsed, the sanskaras are gone. But what's left, you see? What is left is inconceivable, but it's not an ego, it's not an I. So the goal of Sat Yoga, as of every real spiritual path, is to eliminate egocentricity. And this is the approach of this retreat, because once one has cut the anchor to the ego as the center from which one perceives the world and from its perspective on reality, one is in the great bliss. That is the natural state of the self that is liberated from identification. An ego will still remain, but try to imagine an ego without sanskaras. The ego becomes a pure channel of light and truth and love and joy and creativity, but there's no interference pattern. There are no inhibitions. There's no censor. There's no longer any hesitation about recognizing the truth and feeling it to the full. And no fear of being overwhelmed by that infinite nature of consciousness. And so Mahasukha is the level in which there is a radical non-duality between samsara and nirvana. You don't leave samsara, but you leave the sanskaras that created the bondage that made samsara a place of suffering. And then it becomes a nirvanic paradise, but as the manifestation of that infinite creativity that wants to create beauty and bring about happiness for all, to magnify the amount of happiness and of sublime experience and of brilliant imperience and of mastery over all of the challenges of life, so that the fullness of that supreme power of non-duality is experienced in duality. And one sees oneself in the other and recognizes the other as oneself. So this is Mahasukha. And the retreat will be about practicing being in Mahasukha. And the practice is what it amounts to, which will be giving away the whole retreat, of course. But, you know, you can hear this without having been able to realize it. And the point of the retreat is to bring about the ability to realize it. That the ego presentation, manifestation as a bodily being, because all it is a set of collapsed wave functions, it doesn't have any reality and it isn't who you are. And the Mahasukha is the state when you no longer have any concern about the fate of that entity. You know, the word identity is interesting because it really should be pronounced id-entity. All right? It's an entity of an it, not an I, even though it's an I representation, an I thought. But the I thought is an it. It's an object that appears in the mind. Every thought is an identification and is an object. And even the word entity The N is meaning within, you see. So it's an object that has both an inside and an outside. The inside being the mind, the qualium waves, the outside made of the quantum waves. But that inside and outside are two aspects of a Möbius strip, because the outside is also representing what is inside that you cannot see or and cannot make coherent for yourself. And so it arises as karma. But once all of that has been clarified, then inside and outside also are in a state of non-duality. So this is the goal of the retreat, to be in that state and recognize that that is who we are and what we are, and to have no reason to forget it ever again. And this allows one to live in total freedom from inhibition or self-censorship or of the creation of further suffering. And it eliminates all the dualities of life and death, and being and non-being, and of all of the dualities that appear in the phenomenal plane to the ego, like good and bad, and all of the various oppositions that people make and project upon situations in this dream field. So that's probably way too much about this next retreat, but that is our purpose, for those who are ready for the great bliss.